Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you join us. And if you'd like to join our conversations on the air as they happen, you're welcome to do that. Phone numbers here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. It's hard to wrap our minds around the concept that we have a huge, reliable source of energy just a short 93 million miles away, but we're getting to wrap our minds around that. Solar power was once a novelty and is no longer just that. We've gotten used to houses with solar electric panels on the roofs, and that's just part of what is possible in harnessing some of the energy the sun provides free of charge. The latest features will be on display this weekend at the Rogue Valley Green and Solar Tour, the seventh such tour. Fred Gant is in the studio with us here. He's the tour organizer. Welcome, Fred.
Thank you.
And we also have with us Ben Scott, who is the regional coordinator and energy advisor at Clean Energy Works Oregon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
So let's start with you, Fred, about the seventh annual. So what was the idea behind the original version of the Rogue Valley Green and Solar Tour?
Well, we feel that the tours is an excellent way to get across the education for homeowners. And being able to go into a home, talk to builders, talk to existing homeowners about the successes and failures that they've had in their homes, just really gives a source of education that that is just unmatchable.
Has the mission of the Solar Tour changed much at all over the years?
No, we really try to go to different areas, so we really serve the entire community. We've been to Shady Cove, Eagle Point, Medford, Talent, Ashland, and the Applegate. This will be our third trip to the Applegate.
So it's just a matter of trying to make sure you hit different corners of Jackson County?
Well, there's so much out here. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's been some fantastic homes built all around the valley and little clusters. And it works perfect for our tours to find a little niche, a little cluster of homes, say, in the Applegate that serves a different area. Applegate really serves Grants Pass, Williams, all those areas. So it really makes it more convenient if we move around.
So the homes that you'll have visited this weekend on the seventh annual tour, are these homes that are very, very recently built and use very, very up-to-date technology?
Well, let me just make one correction. It's October 5th.
October 5th, I think.
Okay.
Oh, you're right.
So
I'm sorry.
So it is it's going to be a couple weekends away. Mm-hmm. And it's a variety, though. We're really trying to demonstrate some existing homes as well, but primarily new. This particular tour is going to have some existing homes.
Okay, Ben Scott, tell us about Clean Energy Works Oregon and what you do there.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, I'm a regional rep for supporting and expanding the program here in Southern Oregon, and Clean Energy Works is a nonprofit, public-private partnership that provides a one-stop program for what we call whole home energy upgrades, also known as total home performance upgrades, and we're doing that throughout Oregon now. I would just add that we've built a real strong collaboration of local contractors, lenders, government, and utilities so that this program makes it much easier and more affordable for homeowners to improve the comfort and safety of their homes, cut energy waste, and lower their energy expenses, often by a third or more.
And how much has the technology come along in recent years? I mean, are we talking about leaps and bounds, or is it sort of incremental changes in what people could do with solar energy now?
Well, some leaps and bounds and some incremental changes. My background is mostly in existing homes and energy efficiency work. So we do try to encourage homeowners to take care of some of those conservation and energy efficiency things first and then look at renewable energy. So once they get to that point, yes, there's a variety of new products and services that make going solar more affordable and easier to do.
So in the progression you talk about, you're first going to look for ways to make the existing home more efficient before adding anything onto it?
That's certainly our philosophy, yes. Take care of the home, even including fixing things, water leaks. Do the simple things first. Replace your lighting with CFLs or LEDs. So you want to take care of some of the basic things before thinking about spending a great deal of money on mechanical or renewable systems.
And what kind of percentage change can you get, for example, in utility bills by just making some changes to make things more efficient? For example, changing light bulbs.
Well, just that one measure would be maybe a few percentage points, but on average, homes going through our program are saving over 30%.
Really?
Yes, on total energy expenditure.
All right, 30% is not chicken feed for
sure.
It's
a significant chunk.
The LEDs that you mentioned, I know that the CFL's compact fluorescent has been in use for a while now. LEDs seem to be coming along in technology, but not perhaps embraced as fast because they're very cold-looking light. Is there any adjustment being made in those that's making them a little more palatable to the folks at home?
Well, they do advertise that they have warmer spectrums and the Kelvin reading is something that you need to pay attention to. But it is, the technology is out there. It seems like the warmth that comes with the standard LED is pretty bright. But there are I have seen a lot of examples where it's warmer and very similar to what we're used to.
Yes, and speaking of leaps and bounds in technology, I would say going from incandescent to CFL to LED, there have been really significant changes, and many more options are available today.
But you're going to go ahead, Fred.
Well, I just wanted to make an announcement. There is a free demonstration on Friday that would be
Friday before the tour?
This coming up.
This coming Friday, tomorrow, the 20th.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
From 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock. At the Oregon Coffee Roasters in Medford, and this is put on by the Energy Trust. It's a free LED. It's specifically for residential LEDs, and it's a fantastic opportunity for people who are interested to drop by Oregon Coffee Roasters and see this free demonstration.
And so they'll be able to see the latest stuff that's out there with the
exactly, LEDs. Exactly. I'll be there for sure.
Okay. And Ben, how much money can people save using LED? I don't want to get too far down the LED trail here, but how much money can people save using LEDs versus incandescent, for example?
You know, I'm afraid I don't actually have an answer for that, so I don't want to speculate too much. That's a little detailed.
All right. We are talking about energy savings, and the use of solar energy preparatory to the October 5th Rogue Valley Annual Green and Solar Tour. We're talking to Fred Gant, the tour organizer, and Ben Scott, who's the regional coordinator and energy advisor at Clean Energy Works Oregon. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange. Phone numbers 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Fred, as we're talking about the homes in Little Applegate that'll be on the tour this year on October 5th, how different are these, say, from the homes that, or the installations that were in homes when you first began the tour 7 years ago?
Well, we've had a lot of variety over the years, but I would say there's a couple homes on this year's tour that are unique. We've never really had a home that is approaching what they call net zero. So we have a home that potentially could be producing more energy in a year's time than it consumes. They're still doing the testing on that, but they have enough. They build a super tight shell, so their what they call their heat load is reduced extremely compared to a typical code-built home. Mm-hmm. And so the amount of power that they need is greatly reduced, but they have enough solar energy panels to compensate for their heat loss.
Is it also insulated to a higher factor than is usually called
extremely.
For?
Extremely. A typical insulation in the ceiling is R38. They put in R60, for
wow.
example. Mm-hmm. And their walls not only have like a 2x6 with a blown-in blanket, they have an inch of styrofoam outside their walls. So they've really created a tight package. Mm-hmm. We have another home on the tour, which we don't see very often, and that's a straw bale built home. And straw bale is not for everyone, but this will show that it has a very almost a conventional, real earthy look, and very appealing, and an efficient way to build as well.
On the home you were talking about that's close to net zero, is it just solar electric installations they have? There's nothing else like wind or anything else that's helping create
some
electricity?
Well, they also have free solar hot water.
Ah.
So they have solar hot water and solar electric.
All right, so they've really got a lot of stuff going on there with solar stuff. And is it pretty much covering their entire roof area or something?
Well, pretty much, but not completely. It's about maybe two-thirds.
Is the solar hot water installation a step for somebody who's still a little nervous about putting in the photovoltaic stuff? Is that a good place to start, do you think, for some people?
Well, I think so. I think it is. Solar electric has sort of increased in efficiency, and so it's getting to be the popular choice, especially with rebates have been cut back a little on solar thermal, solar hot water. So we're just seeing the popular choice has been solar electric, but it's in terms of overall financial scale, it's much lower. It's only say $7,000 or $8,000, and there's still rebates, so it's still a very good thing to do.
And Ben Scott, who provides those rebates, and why have they come down a bit?
Well, many of the rebates for things like solar electric are passed through from Energy Trust of Oregon.
These are the same people who take your refrigerator away.
They will. Yeah. That's right. But they are representing and managing efficiency programs for the big investor-owned utilities. So that rebate money is coming from them. So they do cut back from time to time or adjust rebates for different types of improvements. I think the idea for seeing less money available for renewable energy is that it's beginning to be more and more accepted. We're seeing more of it, and there's, people are already getting more and more motivated and don't necessarily always need to be incentivized to do things. So you do see Energy Trust and other utilities change their rebates from time to time.
Have the costs changed a lot over, say, the past 10 or 15 years? I mean, is the equipment just generally cheaper as the technology gets better and the manufacturing of it becomes more common?
Yeah, that's very true. We've seen prices of solar panels drop, I believe, in the range of 30 to 40% over the last few years.
Which is that's a significant amount, which would often wipe out the need for a rebate. If you could afford it with the rebate, you could probably now afford it without.
Right. Just one quick point I wanted to make about, you're speaking about solar water heating. We like to view that as an energy efficiency measure, and it's not the same as generating electricity. It's offsetting the need for electricity. So I view that as more conservation and energy efficiency. Yes, it is renewable energy, but it's a slightly different way of thinking about your energy requirements. The need to have less is always good than just thinking of generating more.
All right, but in a case of something like hot water, I mean, you still need to do the same number of dishes. You still need to take a shower. You can certainly apply energy-efficient heads on your shower and your sink.
And that's true. All of that helps a lot, sure.
All right. Fred, you seem like you want to say something here.
Well, it's one of those situations where if you have a big demand, you have a big family and a lot of showers taken, a lot of baths, and of course it's going to be more efficient. It's the frugal family that maybe just a couple where it just go figure you have to, just wait a little longer for your balance point to come out.
All right. How many is there a growth industry in solar installations in the Rogue Valley? I mean, are the suppliers and the installers about the same in number as they were pre-recession? Have they been able to grow through the recession? I mean, what's the general trend there?
I believe there's been good growth.
I think there's more. There's more technicians out there, more companies that are providing solar in our valley, and there's a new one coming in called Solar City, which is a lease program where they'll actually lease panels to sit on your roof, and you get the benefits. And the cost is offset.
And is there a lease term? So at the end of the term, then you get the panels out, and new ones would be brought in.
Exactly.
Really?
It's catching on. It's just new to the valley. It's big in Portland and Bend right now.
Let's take a couple more minutes and talk a bit more with Fred Gant and Ben Scott. Fred is the organizer of the Green and Solar Tour coming up in the Rogue Valley on October 5th. And Ben Scott is the Regional Coordinator and Energy Advisor for Clean Energy Works Oregon. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange. Our phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. For the people who might have just thought, well, this sounds great, you know, I really like the idea of solar power, having panels on the roof, the whole deal, but I just don't think I can afford it, just don't know, I'll mess with the installation, I'm afraid my roof will leak, whatever the reservations might be, can you give an idea of how easy or difficult and or expensive it is to get involved in the first place?
The technicians, the professionals out there are very good. They've really done their homework, and they're great at a free estimate at an assessment, and there's such a wide spectrum in terms of what you would be getting into. Naturally, a good south facing roof. You know, the orientation is one of the first things that they look at, and actually the city of Ashland does assessments as well. Here in Ashland, we have a great conservation department that specifically, you know, rates homes, gives evaluations, and all of that. So, I guess if I've answered your question somewhat, it's a wide variety.
Well, Ben, give us an idea of a start then. I mean, what's a good foot in the door kind of way for people to get involved in solar energy at home?
Well, if you haven't guessed by now, the first thing I'm going to say is for them to get a home energy assessment and find out what their house is really all about. Where are they wasting energy? And then start correcting those things. As I mentioned earlier, take care of the basics, look at your heating system, your mechanicals, and then move towards renewables. It has gotten easier. As Fred mentioned, having these assessments done gives you an idea of where you can start. And the professionals in the solar field will give good estimates and recommendations for what can and can't be done. Not every house is perfect for solar PV. There's issues with orientation and solar access, the roof age and shading, a lot of issues. So that's where you start, is talking with a solar professional to get those assessments done. But again, I'll just say once more, I think people will have better bang for the buck by looking at their home's basic needs first and improving there.
Is some of the changes that are recommended often things about like updating your heating system, even if it was a fossil fuel-based system, just getting it to some place where it's going to be a bit different?
Yes, but even before that, looking at the shell or the envelope of the home, making sure it's been air-sealed to prevent heat loss through air leakage, and then look at things like insulation and windows. These are all part of the shell or envelope as well. You want to look at those things first, even before sizing heating system, for example. So it's very important to stop heat gain and heat loss before thinking about moving into expensive mechanical and heating systems.
So the low-hanging fruit here is really just making the place more efficient to begin with.
It absolutely is. And not only is there a lot of low-hanging fruit on the energy efficiency tree, there's a lot of fruit lying on the ground ready to be picked up.
Well, like what?
Well, again, just doing ordinary things like change your lighting, mm-hmm. The things you mentioned like low-flow water aerators, faucet aerators, and things like that. So there's a lot that can be done that's real simple stuff. Caulking and filling gaps and cracks goes a long way to stopping some of the air leakage. Homeowners can do some of that on their own, but a serious energy efficiency upgrade takes well-trained people in this field.
Right. And we work with insulators all the time. We know them intimately, and we've just found that those companies now, when they come out, they don't just talk about insulation. They'll actually talk about maybe lifting your insulation and air sealing, getting all those leaks taken care of before they put the new insulation down. It's kind of a revolutionary, simple thing, but that's low-hanging fruit, is that air. Air is transporting heat and cold, and to stop that is it costs pennies to stop that.
As you seal up homes, though, and make them tighter and less likely to get stray air blowing through, you want to get rid of the old miserable drafty old house thing from It's a Wonderful Life. But do you run the risk of trapping radon in the house? Does that ever become an issue when you begin to make the house this well sealed?
Well, this area has a very, very low incidence of radon. So we are not considered a radon area. One thing we do, we absolutely really promote is ventilation. I mean, whether you have radon or not, I mean, obviously you should have it tested if you suspect that. But we make sure that you can't make the statement that you can seal out a house too tight. Mm-hmm. If you seal it tight, you want to ventilate it right, and that's sort of one of our mission statements.
Okay, on the Rogue Valley Green and Solar Tour on October 5th, is the tour full? I mean, do you have all the seats filled on the tour at this point?
We still have about a dozen spots left. It is filling up pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. And now, if people can't make the tour for whatever reason, where should they be looking for information about the kinds of things that the tour folks will learn?
Well, this would be a good time to plug the Ashland tour, mm-hmm. because on the following week, the 12th, mm-hmm. the city of Ashland is putting on a tour right here in Ashland. And it's, you register, there's plenty of spaces available according to the website. Yesterday, I checked online myself and signed up, and it's if you go to ashlandparks.apm.activecommunities, it is event number 114, and you'll be able to sign up online or call Ashland Parks, and they've got six wonderful homes coming up here on the 12th as well. So that's a good second option if our tour is full.
And where should people go to sign up for your tour?
And our tour is right here.
RogueValleyGreenSolarTours.com.
Okay, RogueValleyGreenSolarTours.com. We have a link to that and now on our website and our Facebook page. We'll get a link up for this one in Ashland on October the 12th. This tour on October the 5th. I want to thank Fred Gant, the tour organizer, for joining us, along with Ben Scott, Regional Coordinator, Energy Advisor, Clean Energy Works, Oregon. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thanks, Jeff, for having us.
All right, we'll take a short break here on the Jefferson Exchange and come back with Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 19th of September, 2013. It was on this day, 1796, President George Washington gave his farewell address, in which he urged Americans to relinquish their personal or geographical interests for the good of the national interest, and warned against partisanship. The birthday of William Golding, born in St. Columb Minor, Cornwall, England, 1911, joined the Navy, served on a rocket launcher, took part in the D-Day operations at Normandy. He wrote a novel about a group of English schoolboys whose plane crashes on a desert island and who descend into savagery. The title of the book, from the word Beelzebub, translated from Hebrew into English, Lord of the Flies, came out in 1954 and became a classic. It was on this day, 1819, John Keats, 24 years old, wrote his poem, which begins, "Season of mists and mellow fruitfulness, close bosom friend of the maturing sun, conspiring with him how to load and bless with fruit the vines that round the thatch eaves run, to bend with apples the mossed cottage trees, and fill all fruit with ripeness to the core." His ode to autumn. It was a productive year for John Keats, 1819. He wrote his Ode to a Nightingale, Ode to a Grecian Urn, Ode to Psyche, all in that year. Died 2 years later at the age of 25. It's the birthday of the essayist and editor Roger Angel, born in New York City in 1920, who grew up with the New Yorker magazine. His mother was the magazine's first fiction editor. She divorced his father, and she married the New Yorker essayist E.B. White. Roger Angel became a fiction editor at the magazine in 1956, still a senior editor, edited the stories of John Updike, Donald Barthelme, Vladimir Nabokov, and in 1962 he told the editor, William Shawn, about baseball spring training, which Shawn had never heard of, and sent Roger Angel to Florida on assignment. And it was the beginning of Roger Angel's long career writing about the sport. He said, sports writers weren't supposed to be fans, but I would write in the first person about my own emotions, which you were not supposed to do. People used to laugh at me because my World Series pieces came so late, sometimes after Thanksgiving. But Shawn didn't have a sense of deadline. Shawn thought, everybody knows what the news is. Now tell us something else about it. Roger Angel said about baseball, it's a great game for writers because it's just the right pace. You can watch the game and keep score and look around and take notes. Now and then, you even have time to have an idea, which in many sports you don't have room for. Here's a poem for today by Theodore Rethke, Child on Top of a Greenhouse. The wind billowing out the seat of my breeches, my feet crackling splinters of glass and dried putty, the half-grown chrysanthemums staring up like accusers, up through the streaked glass, flashing with sunlight. A few white clouds all rushing eastward, a line of elms plunging and tossing like horses, and everyone pointing up and shouting. Theodore Rethke's poem, Child on Top of a Greenhouse, from the collected poems of Theodore Rethke, published by Anchor Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.